The average piece of produce that you find in the grocery store is 7 to 10 days old. We actually take 99% of the carbon emissions out of the equation. To grow one head of lettuce conventionally requires 21 gallons. But with us, it's about 0.6 to 0.8 gallons.
Welcome to the Be Curious podcast, the podcast that champions solutions to some of the world's biggest problems. I'm your host, Louise Houghton, and in each episode, we get curious about a different subject, from the clothes we wear and the food we eat to overflowing landfills and ocean plastic. All of our guests have brilliant minds and innovative ideas that allow us to lead a more sustainable, conscious, and pollutant-free life. And the best part is, this podcast isn't just about listening. It's about building a community and connecting like-minded individuals who are curious about alternatives that will enhance their lives and the longevity of the planet. And if you're curious already and you want to find out more about the sustainable products and services gifted to you by our many guests on the show, then just head over to our Instagram for more information. You can find out how to enter at becurious_podcast. Today, we're getting curious about produce, something that we buy every week from the grocery store to eat with our friends and family. But how nutritious is the food that we buy, and how can we be sure that it's not covered in toxins and pesticides? Well, to shed some light on all of this and offer a solution is the co-founder and CEO of Lettuce Grow, Jacob Pechanek. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. I'm so excited to dive into this subject because food is really what brings us all together. And when you think about the ritual of sitting down for dinner with your friends or family and that being destroyed by toxins and chemicals, it's really upsetting to me. But you've got this amazing solution with Lettuce Grow. And I'd love to start by hearing a little bit more about what the farm stand actually does.
Sure. Well, maybe it makes sense to talk a little bit of the why. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the alternatives to opting out of what I think is a very broken food system. 80, 90 years ago, 70% of Americans were growing a large part of their own food. And if they didn't grow it, someone on their street was growing it or someone in their neighborhood. So food production really was truly local. And then you had the advent of mechanization and the chemical industry, and our farms started consolidating and going from, you know, individual family farms to more corporate farms. And we've had, I think, about a 70% reduction in the number of farms there. And so the farms have become more and more corporate. You know, and what do corporations, they're not beholden to the families, they're beholden to the shareholders. So they're really thinking about how do we maximize profits. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that means centralization, scale. It's doing things bigger. So it's bigger farms further away from population centers. And it's doing monocrop farming. It's using chemicals to get a boost, you know, in productivity.
And make sure there's no pests.
And exactly. Things. And then pesticides. And then you have these, you know, big runoffs, you know, because of it. And, you know, the result is that the cucumber that you eat today tastes very different. And it's got lots of different, it's got a lot less nutrients and way more pesticides on it than the cucumber you ate 80 years ago,
yeah.
But you weren't around, but let's say the cucumber your grandmother ate. And if you look at the system today, the average piece of produce that you find in the grocery store is 7 to 10 days old. It's taken 1,500 miles to get there. And The industry is so focused on what they call life support, because all of these products are harvested on the farm. And then they're essentially dead, traveling, you know, the 1,500 miles to the store. So the focus is on, like, colder trucks and, you know, different refrigeration and different containers. So that's why you see all of these foods, you know, wrapped in plastic.
You hear it's actually better in some ways to eat frozen food because it's frozen at source.
It is.
Than it is to have something that you've got from the store.
Yeah.
Nutritionally. No,
exactly. So the nutrition, you know, if you look at lettuces lose 30% of their nutritional content every 3 days. spinach is really bad. It loses about half of its content in 24 hours.
Oh, wow.
So
every vegetable is different?
Every vegetable is different. And they also have so many different nutrients, you know, within them. So it's hard to measure them all. So the industry will use certain proxies, you know, like vitamin C content, though there's a lot more. So when we talk about spinach, it's like looking at its vitamin C content degrading, you know, that quickly. So you have this produce that doesn't taste that great, you know. It's kind of because the flavor reflects the nutrient profile. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, on lettuce, there's 52 known pesticides found on it. So some of these pesticides are carcinogens.
Yeah.
They're neurotoxins. They're endocrine disruptors.
As I understand it, even if you're buying organic too, it could be in a field next to one that's non-organic. So surely all of those pesticides and toxins have gone into the soil and then are actually being seeped in, absorbed into the supposedly organic produce.
Yeah. Typically, you know, for a farm to be organically certified, they have to have a sectioned off area of the farm or a greenhouse that's 100% organic.
Okay.
So I haven't heard of that particular issue. There are lots of issues around organic, but that one isn't one that I've heard as much about. But you do have that when it comes to GMOs, right? Because you have these like massive fields of wheat, you know, and then most of it's GMO. And then you have another wheat field, which isn't. Then the seeds, you know, essentially can fly over to the farmer who doesn't want the GMO wheat, and then all of a sudden he's got GMO, you know, wheat growing there. So then, you know, the wheat field that's sprayed with glyphosate, that then, you know, the wind and just runoff, right, can carry that into another field, right? That's organic. So
In the air,
it gets in the air, exactly. So it's can be very, you know, challenging when you're in that type of environment, when you have farms right next to.
Why do you think that we got so hooked on all of these pesticides and didn't sort of continue to adopt that more regenerative farming style?
It was the chemical, you know, the chemical industry. It was after World War II, right? They were building lots of munitions, and they were using nitrogen to do that. And then they said, and so you had this whole like industrial complex, you know, going to create nitrogen. And then they said, they discovered, oh wow, this stuff really works well to grow plants.
Not thinking of the implications.
Yeah. And so there was a lot of research done about plants. I mean, there, it was really, you know, there's some interesting research out there, but it was almost all stopped when these chemicals came out, because everyone's like, wow, these are amazing, you know, to create, you know, massive increases of yield. But we didn't think of all the ramifications, you know, of those choices.
So what was the research that was being done?
I've got to remember like the specifics. I just remember some really more like esoteric things of them measuring almost like the wavelengths that the plants were putting off as a way to then regulate their own watering, for example, right? So almost having like the plants themselves decide, right, when they need to be watered. And you know, the research might have shown, I'm just making this up because I don't remember the numbers, but that might have increased the yield by 20%. You know, and so then the chemicals came out and they say, hey, we increased the yield by 30%, you know, which is a lot more. So a lot of the, you know, research shifted, right, to this, which the chemicals, which offered, you know, a lot more promise.
But there's so much, I mean, especially in this country, so much corn and wheat and soy that's being mass produced all of the time. You know, it makes me wonder, do we really need that much produce? I mean, a lot of it, I think, goes to feed animals, doesn't it?
It does. It does. I think something like, you know, 80% of the farmland and the water resources that go into growing crops actually, the, you know, goes into the animals that are eating those crops.
Yeah, but yet, like, indigenous people, you know, they've kept to their old practices, which is what we're now trying to readopt, which is always very interesting to me. And I'm finding a lot within these conversations on the podcast is, let's go back to doing it the way we used to. You know, that worked actually much better.
Yeah. I mean, when I got into it, I sort of said the same thing, but I realized, look, we are a much more modern society. We should look to the past to get ideas, but we need to, you know, weave them in to how we are now. And that's very much how what Let Us Grow is about. I want to get back to the time where we have much more, as individuals, have much more control over our food. Mm-hmm. We're much more connected to it, that the food is growing close to us. Like 5 feet away, you know, from your door.
And then it's not wasted as well. I mean, I think there's like 40% of the food that's produced is actually wasted.
It is, yeah. And on the, and if you're looking, so the 40% of all food, but if you're looking at just vegetables and fruits, it's like closer to 50%.
Oh.
So, and that's that's because of this, you know, long distance it's traveling.
So it doesn't last the journey.
No. Yeah. And, you know, after spending a lot of time thinking about it, I've come to the conclusion it actually makes zero sense to go to the grocery store to get fresh food because
it's not fresh.
It's not fresh. You know, I get it going to get canned things and, you know, other products like that. But the fresh food is supposed to come, you know, is supposed to be just picked. And so, and we're eating things that are, you know, much older than that. So with Let Us Grow, we're getting back to actually being able to eat just picked food that then tastes delicious because it has all of its nutritional content and you have no waste because the plant's still growing and living and thriving until
you take off what you want.
Until you eat it. And then on top of it, you have this, like, I would say it's like a magical experience because you're reconnecting with nature. You're reconnecting with your DNA. You know, which is in your DNA is, you know, we've been here, I don't know how many, you know, hundreds of thousands of years, and only the last 100 did we stop growing our own food. So we're designed to grow our own food.
Is it because we just don't have enough space, though?
Well, it's time, it's space, and it's experience and knowledge, you know, because your great grandparents probably grew their own food. And then at some point, they just stopped passing along this knowledge. And now everyone thinks they don't have a green thumb. You know, so many people are like so scared. And I think that's another sign that's in their DNA. Cause like, why are people so terrified? It's because we don't want to kill plants because that's also, you know, our primary source of food.
Or it's muddy and that means you just got to wash it and, you know, you can buy it from the store pre-washed. So
there's the convenience. Yeah. There's the convenience. Well, so, you know, the answer to a lot of this, the problem is growing your own food, but that doesn't fit our modern lifestyles. So with Let Us Grow, we really have like a hack to it. We actually do the hardest part of the growing, which is knowing what to grow, when to grow it, how far down to push the seed to get the seed to germinate. And we get the plants to about 2 weeks old, which is roughly, let's say, like maybe 3 inches, you know, tall. And once you get a plant there, it's well, I wouldn't say it's indestructible, but it's pretty hard to mess it up. So we get the plants to there, and then we send it living to our growers, who then put them in our hydroponic systems that we call farm stands.
Amazing.
And then the farm stands keep the plants alive.
You're so right. Like, getting a seed going is really hard.
It's stressful. It's stressful. And, you know, at best, it's probably people have a 70% success rate. But it's like you're looking at it, it's like, did I add enough water? Nothing's happening. Did I add enough? And then you add more, and then you add more. And then you're like, oh, shoot, I added,
down
I added too much. But each seed, each variety needs to be pushed down different amounts, you know. So that's where, like, let our experts figure out how to do that, and then we send them living versus our current system. Plants are grown to maturity, harvested, killed, and then sent dead in refrigerated trucks, we send them living in non-refrigerated trucks, much smaller volume, like 1/11th of the volume of a mature plant. So when you look at it all in the, at a high level, we actually take 99% of the carbon emissions out of the equation.
That was going to be my next question, that transportation that you just mentioned. 99?
99, yeah.
Wow, that's a phenomenal figure. Congratulations.
Yeah. We take 99% of the carbon out of the equation, and we take about 98% of the water.
Wow. Yeah, because you don't think about it, do you? It's got to get from the farm to the maybe factory, from the factory to the store, from the store then to your home before you actually eat it. And that's a lot of traveling that these plants and vegetables have to do.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a ton of traveling. It's I can't remember how many stops, but it's like 7 stops, I think, on average, 1,500 miles. I mean, there's lots of transfers of possession,
yeah,
you know, along the way.
And then the water as well. I mean, again, I don't think that we think about the water that's used to irrigate the crops all of the time, but that must be an awful lot.
There's to grow 1 head of lettuce conventionally requires 21 gallons of water.
For 1 head of lettuce?
For 1 head of lettuce. And because 50% wasted, you actually have to grow 2 heads of lettuce for every one that you consume. So that's 42 gallons of water
for one thing that you can
per head of lettuce that's eaten. And
they say that lettuce contains some water, so maybe
it does. I mean, it's pulling up that water, but with us, it's about 0.6 to 0.8 gallons per head of lettuce. So because the system, the farm stand has a tank of a reservoir of water that.
How much is in that tank?
Depending on the model, we have two different. One holds about 21 gallons and the other is 9 gallons. So it's a lot of water, but the water is all recycled. So the way it works is it's on a timer, and every hour or so the timer goes off and water gets pushed up to the top of the farm stand, and it rains down inside, and the plants just get their roots, get the right amount of water and the right amount of nutrients. And then all the water is collected again
in the tank.
And it's all recycled. So you need very small amounts of water, you know, in the end to grow.
Do you ever have to
very
top
small
it up?
Amounts of nutrients? Yeah, we always recommend topping it up once a week just to get you in a pattern, you know, where you say, oh, every Sunday morning, you know, this is my routine. I'll go top it off and add nutrients. But, you know, for me, I sometimes, you know, or, you know, I might go on vacation. Well, I'd love to go on a 3-week vacation, but you could go on a 3-week vacation, come back.
You got dinner there ready for you.
Dinner's ready. And then you should add water, but
it's
pretty resilient. Yeah. We were very lucky with the design of the product. It works incredibly well, and it's like 15 minutes to set up and about 10 minutes of weekly maintenance.
Did you know about hydroponic farming before you started lettuce growing?
No. Well, I started, you know, the backstory is I was in the film, you know, world, and I learned that I was going to be a dad. And I started looking at the food that we were eating, and you know, the craft services isn't really, you know, healthy stuff. So I was like, okay, I just want to eat, you know, I don't want to eat the processed stuff and stuff with all these, you know, words you can't pronounce. And I don't want to eat produce with chemicals, you know, on it. And I was really shocked to just see how expensive organic produce was and how inaccessible it was, you know, to everyone. And so I thought, wow, we should invest in organic, better organic, you know, farming practices to make organic produce much more affordable. And I ended up starting a farm to do that. That was in Austin, Texas. And
that was the first step on this journey.
That was the first step. And that farm was actually aquaponic, which is it's hydroponic growing of lettuces, and aquaculture was growing of fish in the same ecosystem, which is like elegant on paper, but in reality, it's very challenging to manage two ecosystems at the same time. But
so you were doing that whilst you were still working in the movie industry?
No, I pretty much, once I like woke up to this issue, I just started doing more and more research, and I just knew, I saw so many problems. I was like, somebody's got to do something about this. Mm. And then I guess I realized it's like there was a calling, you know, for me to do something about it. So I just kind of quit film cold turkey and just kind of jumped, you know, full on into farming. And there was a lot to learn. So I just put all my time into it.
So it started out as a farm that you were wanting to sell the produce before the idea of the farm stand came along?
Yeah, it was just about the produce. How do we make organic produce? Make it no chemicals, also no waste, no plastics. Mm-hmm. And so we were...
Didn't even talk about the plastics on the journey of the food. Yeah. I mean, that's...
Well, now going to the grocery store, like everything is wrapped in plastic. Oh, and the crazy thing is like all the stores... I don't know if it's in the whole country, but in California, we banned plastic bags, right, for carry out. So, yeah. It's not okay to carry it out, but we can wrap every cucumber and every lettuce and every, you know, everything that we see in the...
Even the little plastic bags that you get in the produce section. I mean, yeah. Even if it is sort of fresh and not wrapped, we then put it in a plastic bag to take it through the checkout.
It's plastic. It's plastic everywhere, and it drives me nuts because it doesn't need to be, but it is because of our system, mm-hmm. because we've bought into this like an overly industrialized, centralized food system. And if we reconfigure it to be more distributed farming, and that's really what Lettuce Grow is all about, then we don't need all the plastic and we don't need all the chemicals and we don't need all the labels to say how this and that was grown because we grew a lot of it ourselves, right? Or so,
because it's not just the plastic, even just to talk about plastic, it's not just the plastic that, say, a bag of lettuce is in. You know, that's come in a bigger box with 10 bags of lettuce, that's come in a bigger crate with 20 bags, you know. So it's
no, and then there's, and then when realize. You, and then when half of it goes to waste, you're also throwing not only putting all the lettuces and the produce in the landfill, you're putting all the plastic in it. Mm-hmm. So, and that has such a big toll on the on our environment of the resources that go into making it, and now half of that is tossed. So
hopefully some of the lettuce waste would go in the compost.
Hopefully it does, but you know, I think at the consumer's home, more and more they're putting it in the compost, but the grocery store, they don't have the time.
That's true.
To do that.
Mm, they have
the cases and cases. I see these pictures of all the cases and cases in the dumpster.
There are some initiatives now being made, I think, where the stores will actually donate that food that's not sold by a certain date to certain organizations that are making sure that people who don't have as much financial abundance can actually get hold of that.
Yeah, they definitely should do more of that.
So when did the idea of the actual farm stand come about then? You got the farm and then you kind of thought, okay, I'm going to create this amazing...
Well, on the farm, there was really two big things that stood out. One was, it was just like a magical experience being on the farm, you know, pulling out. And we also had row crops, but pulling out my first turnip out of the ground and just wiping it off of my jeans and eating it. It was a little bit dirty, but it tasted so good. And that feeling, that was just amazing. And I was like, okay, I want as many people to have this feeling. And people would come over, you know, even the farm was like 13 minutes from downtown. And people would hesitate in coming over, but then once they came over, they'd stay for like 2 hours and want to come back on the weekend with their families. They wanted to volunteer. So it was, I saw that pull. So I was like, okay, I want to get as many people, like I want to get them exposure to it. And the other thing I saw was that the hard part of getting, you know, good product to the people wasn't the growing part. It was all the supply chain. So in a way, putting those two concepts together, and then when I came up with the idea, I actually thought it was just so unlike any other idea that I've had, because I tend to think in systems and scale, and this was almost like selling a widget, you know, selling a product, a consumer product, mm-hmm. which felt uncomfortable, you know, to me.
Because it was something you hadn't done before.
Yeah, and also I just didn't want it to seem like I was in it to just sell like some product over and over. I'm in it to change the system and to make things better for my kids, you know, and their peers.
And what kind of things can you grow in the farm stand?
Oh, you can grow anything that's not a tree or a bush, pretty much. So,
carrots even?
You can. I mean, root vegetables are a little bit hard, but I've definitely grown little carrots, little radishes. But what it's best at would be like about any herb you can imagine. Mm-hmm. Like parsley, cilantro, dill, onions, chives, oregano, thyme, things like that. Then on the leafy greens, romaine and butterhead or bib lettuce, those are two most common. We have different like heat tolerant lettuces. So if you live like in Arizona or Joshua Tree, you know, you can still grow. So we have heat tolerant. So if we have like arugula and then tot soy, bok choy,
kale.
Yes. Thank you. And then we got the veggies like cauliflower, broccoli, eggplant. Right now, I keep hearing how we went to a new type of tomato, but the tomatoes are very prolific and extremely tasty. And we have, cucumbers. We have strawberries. We also have edible flowers, which are really cool because they're decorative and they have a nice, you know, flavor. And you can't really find them in the grocery store. And no. Then you can even grow watermelon. So that's not something we offer that much, but it's pretty magical to like almost see like a bowling ball, you know, yeah. grow out of thin air, and everything pretty much just tastes
wow.
so good.
And yeah. you can put these farm stands inside or outside, right?
Yeah, we started with outdoor only. And there was so much demand for indoor, so we built
attachments. Because people don't have space all the time.
Exactly. And you also have people who, you know, let's say if you grow in Massachusetts, you have a shorter outdoor growing season, and then you want to keep growing. You get that bug, and you change your lifestyle around eating your own produce, so you want to actually grow during the winter. So that's why we made light attachments that you can then bring your farm stand in the winter. And then we saw that there was just so much demand, and especially in cities like New York City, that have small, like there's a lot of people live in a space the size of this room. So we made, that's our newest model called the Farm Stand Nook, is made just, it's only indoor growing, but for really small
spaces. Oh, that's
great.
And how many different ports does that one have?
Yeah, the Farm Stand Nook has 20 ports. And the original farm stand has between 18 and 36. And a really important thing to keep in mind is that you can grow the 20 plants, but you get, if you're growing lettuce, because we've grown the lettuce for the first 2.5 weeks before we sent it to you, we've grown it for like half of its life. So you only need to grow it 2.5 to 3 weeks
before it's ready to be harvested.
So you could get one head of lettuce a day,
wow,
like every day of the month.
If you
have the right rotation and you were like only, let's say you were just growing lettuces. So it's really, you know, prolific. There's a lot of yield to it. You can feed a family. I have a couple in my house and I'm always putting boxes out like this big, full of produce for the neighbors, because there's so much.
That's nice of you. Everybody comes to.
I'm the lettuce man. I don't think they know him, like lettuce grow, or maybe some do, but they do call me the lettuce man.
Amazing. Have you heard any stories as well of like people who've really noticed a significant difference between eating something that's so like fresh and close to home to compared to store-bought stuff?
So many. I mean, every single day. The most that I see is around kids. And I observe it with my own kids. You know, they going to a restaurant, they wouldn't eat tomatoes.
They wouldn't?
No.
Okay.
But growing on the farm stand, you know, when they were little, they would just pull the cherry tomatoes off and eat them. You know, I've got one in the living room and they're playing around and they'll want a snack. They'll just go pull like a leaf of lettuce off and eat it.
For a snack.
That's great. And it's not just my kids, it's others, you know, like it's, but the kids really gravitate. And that's like why, that's what really made me like it clicked that it was in our DNA, just seeing how the kids interact. And we're in 3,500 schools. So I've seen, you know, a lot of kids with it, but it totally changes their eating because it's kind of like if they understand where something came from, then they're more connected to it and they're more willing to try it. Maybe they don't like everything, but they'll try it.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time they like it. But when it's like comes out of a black box,
yeah,
you know, then they're like, well, you know,
are they then less likely to want all these kind of sugary produced foods?
Well, I think when kids get the sugar, they almost like react like addicts, you know, to it. So, but I think, I do think there's a problem. We have like way, you know, too much processed sugar, you know, available.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that they're generally happy with their meal, you know, with if they grew it, if they even prepared part of it, and it's going to be full flavored. You know, you don't even, there's so many like salad dressings and things like that that you need. And that's really to add flavor. And I like adding that, but I normally just do olive oil and lemon because you don't need to add that much flavor.
So nutrient dense.
Exactly. Yeah. It's very tasty when you grow it.
You said you're in 35,000 schools?
3,500 schools.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. My goal is to be in, you know, many more, but it takes time to get there.
So how have you done that?
We have something called Let Us Give, where schools can schools can nominate themselves, or people can nominate schools, especially those in like underserved communities, to receive a farm stand, and we'll donate them. And then there's also other school systems that have really made it a part of their curriculum and that have purchased farm stands, you know, as a way to teach the kids, you know, all kinds of things.
Yeah.
You know, one very cool thing about the farm stand is that you can pull the plants out at any time and see the roots. And so you could almost like pull them out every single day and like see how much, you know, the plants have grown. And our units are also made of upcycled plastic, like ocean-bound plastic. Yeah. And so that's another discussion area for the kids, right? Of
going green in every step of the way. It's
exactly.
Brilliant. So who have you partnered with to make the farm stands then?
We have, we make them all in the U.S. and we have manufacturing partners, and then we're very involved in the selection of materials, you know, that we use. So we work with a company that gets our materials from coastal communities that lack any type of trash, like industrial trash collection or recycling. So all the stuff that they, you know, that they waste will go into the ocean. Yeah, we're very particular about like really all the decisions that we make, because we don't want to solve one problem and then create three other problems. And another thing that I think is really important is everything we do is California Prop 65 compliant. And Prop 65 is you probably see warnings. There's even a warning when you go into Starbucks. It's like, it's not compliant there. It's
seeing
like
it more and more everywhere.
Everywhere, yeah. Because things have chemicals that are known to the state of California to cause cancer or reproductive issues, and for us, it's important that you can feel completely safe growing with us, and that there will be nothing that's leaching out into the water or into the plants that will cause any problems.
And 99% less carbon emissions, it sounds like, as well, across the board. So does that take into account all of the less plastic as well as the transportation and things like that?
It's two things. It's primarily the transportation because, with the current system, you're going to, a head of lettuce is going to be about this big, whereas a lettuce seedling is that big. Mm-hmm. And one requires refrigeration and one requires 1,500 miles on average of transport.
Yeah.
And the other one's fewer miles because we have more farms around the country that are growing this and smaller packaging, smaller volume, not refrigerated. And then you do have 50% of lettuces going into a landfill grown versus with us. It's really, there's no need to because the plant's alive until you eat it. So when you
People can add on as well if they get a small one and then they decide that they want more, they can put another layer on top and it's almost like just a little bit of a jigsaw puzzle.
That's exactly, yeah. Everything's like twist lock. You can add another level. And I think about 30% of our growers add a level within the first 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
So it's it's a good sign because people are nervous before they start and then they do and they're like, oh, I get this.
This is really easy.
Then they figure out how to fit it into their life and then they add more over time.
Great. And what are the plans for the future? What more do you want to do, Jacob?
There's a lot more. There's going to be a big reveal.
Really?
Yeah, soon.
Okay.
I think it's a little early to say right now, but we've got something in mind that I think is going to be pretty disruptive and make our product much more accessible.
Fantastic. Oh, well, I look forward to hearing more about that. Maybe we can share about it on Instagram or something as and when you've got it out in the world. Well, thank you so much for your time today. It's been so interesting learning a bit more about the food system in general and everything you're doing with Lettuce Grow. And thank you for changing your entire career and actually standing up and doing something about this issue. It's really brave of you and really bold. So I appreciate it. And I know that you've got an offer as well that you want to share with our listeners. So,
oh, yes. Well, if you're getting excited hearing about this and you're thinking about starting growing, now is the time to do it. We've got a discount for you if you use the code BECURIOUS at checkout. You have 20% off.
That's so
generous. Which is like the same as our typical Black Friday promotion. So seize the day, seize the opportunity, and just start. You'll love it.
Amazing. Thank you so much. That's so kind of you. I really appreciate it. If you want to catch up on that as well, we'll have it in the show notes. So you can just double check on the code in the show notes to find it out. And what is your Instagram handle and your website if people want to go to that too?
The website's lettucegrow.com, which is spelled like a lettuce, L-E-T-T-U-C-E. And that's the same as the Instagram handle, Lettuce Grow.
Amazing. Thanks again, Jacob. It's been such a pleasure to see you and to have you on the show. And do go to our Instagram as well if you want to find out about all of the other gifts and products and services that we have for all of our listeners. It's at BECurious_podcast. You can check it out and find out how to enter on there. I'm Louise Howson. Thanks again, Jacob. And until next time, guys, stay curious.